uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And happy Monday, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you on this beautiful first Monday of May. May Day this weekend. May Day, of course, started in the United States in 1886 with the first protests in favor of an 8-hour workday. An 8-hour workday! What a radical idea! Well, in fact, back in the 1880s, if you were a member of a labor union, you could be arrested and put in prison for conspiracy. Felony conspiracy. Conspiring for what? Conspiring to have an 8-hour workday. It was a crime. Thus, May Day came about. It celebrated the, I believe it was the Haymarket Massacre, as it was referred to. I don't have my notes on this in front of me, but winging it from memory here, I believe that was in 1886 as well. In the Haymarket situation, you had a bunch of people, you know, it was a riot for democracy in the workplace. In other words, an attempt to unionize. And the police came in and they arrested a whole bunch of folks. And as I recall, 8 of them were hanged for conspiracy. And a number of the folks who participated in this, another one committed suicide in a jail cell, and several of them were released. But either 6 or 8 of them were hanged. Speaking of hanging and brutality, get this. There is a nation in this world, it's called Uzbekistan, where, as the New York Times reported this weekend, an article by Don Van Natta Jr., beating, I'm quoting now from actually the State Department, beating often with blunt weapons and asphyxiation with a gas mask. That's where they put a gas mask on you, strap it on, you're tied down so you can't reach up to your head, and they strap this thing on, put those straps on the back, and then they shut off the air going into it. Pretty terrifying. And the gas mask, of course, covering up the eyes, the nose, the mouth, everything. Separate international human rights groups had reported that torture in Uzbek jails, including boiling of body parts, using electroshock on genitals, and plucking out fingernails and toenails with pliers. 2 prisoners were boiled to death, reported Human Rights Watch. The February 2001 State Department report said bluntly, and I quote, "Uzbekistan is an authoritarian state with limited civil rights." Well, that's a bit of an understatement. So we have a country out there that is willing to do these kinds of things to its own people. What does the Bush administration do with this country? I can tell you how Jimmy Carter would have responded to it. Jimmy Carter would have said, you know, these folks are criminals. They're not respecting basic human rights. We're not going to have anything to do with them. But no, not George W. Bush. George W. Bush looked over at Uzbekistan, pulling out fingernails with pliers, boiling people to death, electric shocks on genitals, looked at them and said, my kind of guy. My kind of guy. In fact, he invited the president, Islam Karimov, the president of Uzbekistan, to the White House. He gave him more than $500 million. And we have now discovered the CIA, this unmarked CIA plane that was flying around taking not necessarily Americans, it may have been. We have no way of knowing how many Americans have been disappeared by this administration. We know of 2 because it publicly happened early on, but there may be others. There may be dozens, there may be hundreds, there may be thousands, maybe 1, maybe none. We don't know, because the Bush administration tells us it's none of our damn business. I have a problem with that. But what the Bush administration we do know is doing is they are taking prisoners from the United States, or at least U.S. territory, Guantanamo Bay, and from other countries around the world. And they are taking these prisoners to Uzbekistan and saying, go at them. The Bush administration has come up with a euphemism for this. You can thank Alberto Gonzalez. Rendition. We're going to render these people. Rendering is how you make soap. Rendering is when you boil meat or a dead animal carcass. And the oil comes, the fats come out of it, and you add lye to it, and you've got soap. That's rendering. Well, I guess that makes a certain amount of sense to the Bush administration. This is increasingly not the country I was born in. The people who have taken over this country, the Rovians, I discovered over the weekend, and I don't know why I didn't know this before, that Karl Rove was involved in the presidential campaign of 1980. And had worked for George Herbert Walker Bush before that, going all the way back to when he was the president of Young Republicans. That Karl Rove was involved in that campaign, along with Lee Atwater, of course. That being the campaign where Yasser Arafat, in 1996, sat down with Jimmy Carter and said, you know, the 1980 Bush-Reagan campaign came to me and asked me if I could get them to hold the hostages, if I could negotiate a deal with Iran where they would keep the hostages until the election, till after the presidential elections in the United States, so that Reagan and George Bush Sr. would win the election and Carter and you, Mr. Carter, would lose. And Arafat says to Carter that he refused to go along with the deal, but apparently somebody did. Because the hostages were released the minute Ronald Reagan put his hand on the Bible. And within months, the Reagan-Bush administration was selling the missile parts, keeping their deal, selling the missiles to Iran in violation of U.S. and international law. And it wasn't a quid for a pro quo for anything other than, hey, thanks for helping us steal an election. Karl Rove was involved in that election that year. And this country has suffered such damage to the morality of this country. The basic core moral fiber of this country has been so damaged by 25 years of Republican corruption of our political process. And I'm reluctant to even say Republican corruption, because there are some good Republicans out there. George Voinovich, Olympia Snowe, some of these Republicans actually believe in the traditional values of their party, as it were. But they have been pushed out of the way by these right-wing zealots, these ideologues, these extremists, these maniacs. And so many of the American populace, the American public, have been willing to go along with this because they've been indoctrinated by right-wing talk radio. It's really and truly a tragedy. This is the great tragedy of America, the unraveling of our democratic institutions. A true tragedy. Just as another way of highlighting it, this... Our news from the Northeast this morning. We have one from New Hampshire, Nashua, New Hampshire, and one from Vermont. This is from New Hampshire. The headline in the Nashua Telegraph, this is about a local guy in New Hampshire. A man convicted of stealing more than $600,000 in a business loan scam. Now, you hear business loan scam, you think what? Republican, of course. A man convicted of stealing more than $600,000 in a business loan, or conservative Democrats, for that matter. I am not a partisan Democrat. All this ranting about the Republicans. You can insert Zell Miller in there as well. And increasingly Joe Lieberman. And certainly in Congress, there's no shortage of Democrats who sold out to the dark side of the force as well. Nonetheless, a man convicted of stealing more than $600,000 in a business loan scam received an award from the National Republican Congressional Committee honoring his business leadership and party support. You get this? The guy is a thief. He steals $600,000. He gets arrested and convicted. He goes to jail. He comes back. He does his duty. And the Republicans decide to honor him. He received the 2004 Ronald Reagan Republican Gold Medal Award last week. It was at a dinner and tax reform workshop in Washington, D.C., at which President Bush was the keynote speaker. The award was given by House Majority Leader Tom DeLay to honor business leaders who support the party and honor, quote, President Reagan's vision for America. Well, the Reagan administration, end quote, the Reagan administration was the administration, the single number one administration in the history of the United States to have the largest number of senior administration officials convicted of felonies. The Reagan administration still to this day stands as the most criminal administration in the history of the United States. In fact, had Reagan not been senile, he probably would have been indicted by the House, certainly could have been, and convicted of the Senate of treason in the Iran-Contra affair, in the October surprise affair, where they stole the election from Jimmy Carter and they sold weapons to the Iranians. But actually, a friend of mine was the court reporter who was in the room with Reagan the day that he was deposed, when, what, it was 124 times, 136 times, something like, over 100 times, he said, "I don't remember." And I had dinner with her and her husband a couple of days later, and she said, "I was there." She said, "I was sitting 6 feet from him." She said, "He really didn't remember. He was clueless." In fact, she said, several times, he forgot why he was in the room. He forgot who the people around him were. He forgot what room we were in. He kept forgetting that that this was a legal proceeding, that he was being deposed. He was already full-blown, well into Alzheimer's. And this was either the first or second year of the second term of the Reagan presidency. George Bush was running the country. Reagan was gone. Which is why you didn't see him from day one after he left the White House, because he'd already been gone for a couple of years. A true tragedy, but, gee, you know, how we handle things in the United States. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number if you'd like to call in. Joe in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I've been listening to you for quite a while here on WTKG in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And
a fine station.
I heard the man call in last week. He was talking about how the pools weren't opening here in Grand Rapids, and I don't know if you were aware of this, but we've had like 22 bank robberies in the last 3 months, and then the only businesses that seem to be opening are pawn shops
and overnight loan places. Welcome to Republican, welcome to conservative economic policies, Joe. This is the predictable consequence. It's always happened this way.
And they're so concerned about getting steroids out of high schools when meth labs are popping up everywhere, you know.
Yep. Yep.
I have a fear that the only kids that are using these drugs are the higher-end kids.
Yeah.
And that's why they want to protect them.
Yep. It is truly a sad commentary on the state of affairs.
And I've also noticed that your program cuts out here in Grand Rapids more than anybody else's program.
Well, let me just speak to that, Joe. That's a problem on our end, and we're working it out with the radio station. We send tones down the line that tell radio stations when it's time to go to break and when not to, and it hasn't always been perfect. We moved from Vermont to Oregon, which is where I am now. We're using a different studio and different equipment, and we're still trying to work that out. It's not any kind of conspiracy on the part of the station. Trust me.
All right.
There's nothing wrong there. In fact, the folks at WTKG really support this program and the work that we're doing, and you should support their sponsors and support them. Joe, thanks a lot for the call. I do appreciate it. Great to hear from you.
Keep up the work, Tom.
I'll do it. You too. Tag, you're it. Pass it along. 20 minutes past the hour.
That's it.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Bring them on.
To all the troops I sent to war, who won't be coming home no more, I'm glad you came along. I dedicate this song to all the troops I sent.
And a tragedy it is. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Neil in Casper, Wyoming on the line. Hey, Neil, you're from Cheney country.
Yep, Cheney's hometown.
Oh, my goodness. How do folks there perceive Mr. Cheney?
Oh, this is such a heavy Republican area. I mean,
he's a hero.
No wrong. Yeah, can do no wrong.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Do no wrong.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Not everybody believes that.
Not everybody. Okay. So you're one of the enlightened few. Neil, what's on your mind?
Well, we have a congresswoman. Her name is Barbara Cuban. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
We only have one in the state of Wyoming.
Yep. Same as Vermont.
Right. And last election, there was an issue statewide about tort reform, and 75% of the people voted it down. Now, last week, I went to a town hall meeting with Mrs. Cuban.
Let's just remind folks what tort reform is. Tort reform is a fancy phrase for jiggering or reconfiguring the laws around what you can sue about and what you can't, so that it's harder for individuals to sue corporations and easier for corporations to screw the average person.
Right.
That's the bottom line. I mean, that's tort reform in a nutshell. You can have lots of fancy language for it, but the bottom line is make it easier for corporations to come after you and me and make it almost impossible for us to sue corporations. Jerry Spence lives out there, doesn't he?
Yes. He's up in Jackson.
Yeah, he's a good man. Anyhow, as you were saying, as Jerry Spence says, and then you got your congressman cornered here on this, congresswoman, rather.
Right. So we're at a town hall meeting, and let me add that her husband is a retired physician. Okay.
Yeah. So she should have some firsthand knowledge of torts.
Right.
That is
lawsuits. Well, her comments were, the people of Wyoming made a tremendous mistake voting down tort reform, and that when it came up as a congressional issue just recently, she voted for it.
She was going to fix the mistake that the...
Yes, that 75% of her constituents said, we don't want this.
Including all those Republicans.
Yes, and that's the big thing. I mean, out here, it's not a Democrat, Republican, liberal, conservative issue. It's because practically everybody out here is a Republican.
Yeah, it's more of the, do we want the mining companies polluting our groundwater and we can't stop them? Do we want the drilling companies, the extractive industries taking our land and we can't stop them? Do we want, you know, the ranchers and the lumber companies to be running roughshod over the environment and screwing up the streams and the rivers so we can't fish in them anymore or that nothing can live in them? You know, do we want that sort of thing and not to be able to stop it? Or do we want to have the ability to challenge some of these corporations if they mess with us?
Well, let me tell you what else happened.
So okay, you've got to do it quickly, Neil. We've got about a minute left.
I asked Mrs. Cuban, I said, instead of doing tort reform, there are only two federal monopolies granted to two industries. One is Major League Baseball. The other is the insurance industry. Wouldn't it be a much more Republican thing to do is to get rid of the monopoly powers of the insurance industry and let the free market take care of that? And she had no idea that the federal government granted insurance.
Well, I have to tell you, I didn't know that either, Neil.
It is. Yep.
Huh. So I the insurance industry has exemption from antitrust?
Yes.
Oh, interesting. I knew that, you know, like the nuclear industry, there's a few others that do, but wow, I didn't realize. And Major League Baseball.
If you could look into that some more, I'd like to hear more of that from you.
Okay? I will. You've really piqued my curiosity. I'll track that down. Neil, thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks, Tom.
I appreciate it. Thanks for fighting the good fight there in the People's Republic of Wyoming.
Thank you, sir.
Good to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. This is the radio home of democracy.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago, and they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call, and you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO. 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program. Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Now, if you're George Bush, you also need a few fixers, or Tom DeLay, for that matter. And you need Karl Rove, and you need big weapons, and you need a phony war, and you need to make up enemies, and you need to come up with weapons of mass destruction, and then you need to give money to all the corporations, you need to undo the tax code, and you need to change, take apart Social Security, and you need to change tort reform, and you need to roll back environmental regulations, and you need to give the forests away to the logging industries, and you need to test pesticides on children, and on it goes. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number is Xavier in Santa Cruz, California, on the line. Hey, Xavier, how you doing today?
Hey, good morning, Tom. Welcome you to the Left Coast.
Thank you. Thank you. Great to be here.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the history of International Labor Day, May Day.
Yes. Did I have my statistics wrong when I started out? I was
I'm just flying from memory. Yeah, I'm kind of going from memory here, too. I was hoping somebody who was really a scholar on it would call in, but figured I would. A couple years ago, I was in China teaching English, and I had asked, it was on May Day that I had a class, and I had asked mostly doctors and chemists and stuff were my students, and they all knew about it. And,
oh, sure. Well, May Day has been celebrated by communist nations for, well, you know, ever since communism emerged, you know, in 1917, 1918, whenever the Bolshevik Revolution was, 1913, anyhow, way back then.
Yeah.
Communism has been around, May Day was like their official holiday because they were selling communism as the people will run the country.
Right.
And, the workers will run the country, the hammer and the sickle, the whole thing of labor. And it was a nice slogan. It didn't work out that way, but they still celebrate May Day.
Well, what I wanted to say about it is my understanding that there was actually a bombing that had happened. There was like a huge rally, and then towards the end of the day when most of the people had gone home and it was just like the stalwarts were left,
right,
there was a bomb thrown and some people were killed.
Yeah, that was Haymarket Square.
It was blamed on anarchists, and it's possible that this was Agent Provocateur.
Yeah, that was Haymarket Square in Chicago in 1886, as I recall.
And that's just my understanding of history of it. But one of the things I was also thinking about is when I was in China, one of the things I pointed out was that, I was able to speak freely. I just couldn't stand on the corner and denounce the government. But a lot of the people I spoke with agreed that China was basically taking the bad parts of capitalism and keeping the bad parts of communism.
Right.
And the United States was doing the opposite, and they were both merging into the same thing.
Yeah, I agree. I lived and worked in China for 1 month in 1986, the month of November 1986, and studied acupuncture, actually, at a hospital there, the International Acupuncture Teaching Hospital in Beijing, and was hanging out. And, in fact, I was the only American there. And was hanging out with people from all over the world and a lot of Chinese. And I had a translator with me, and, you know, it was part of the whole hoop-de-doop. You know, if you wanted to do this thing, they would supply you with a translator. And it was amazing. It was so cheap because the yuan was worth so little at that time that, you know, a month in the hospital in the hospital, complete with room and board and a translator and a dedicated doctor. I had a doctor and a translator with me, you know, all day, every day, teaching me this stuff. It was like one-on-one instruction. And the whole thing was like $296 a month or something like that. I mean,
yeah.
And that was big money for them. I remember I took the our translator and the doctor, Dr. Liu and Mrs. Wu, to dinner at the Sheraton Great Wall Hotel in Beijing for a pizza, something they'd never had before. And the doctor, when she saw the menu, was so horrified she could hardly eat because the meal cost more than her monthly salary.
Yeah. Yeah, I was treated for stuff while I was over there, and I was amazed at how inexpensive it was.
We charged 7 cents for treatments.
Amazing.
Yeah, 7 cents.
Well, thanks for the airtime today, Tom.
Sure, yeah. Xavier, thanks a lot for calling in. It's fascinating, the history of May Day and the whole idea that here in the United States we're really no longer celebrating May Day as a memory of the labor movement. We're not celebrating, and we haven't really basically since Reagan came into office and had some control over federal holidays and the bully pulpit to promote them. We haven't celebrated May Day. We haven't taught the history of May Day. I'm guessing most of the kids in our schools don't know the history of May Day. At the most, they may know that a lot of communist nations celebrate May Day as a workers' day, not realizing that it's a celebration of what happened in Haymarket Square in Chicago in 1886 when it was a felony to be a member of organized labor, of a union. Excuse me. It was a felony to be a member of a union because that was considered illegal or criminal conspiracy. Conspiracy. Well, things changed for a while. 1935, the passage of the Wagner Act made it possible to unionize. And a middle class began to emerge as democracy in the workplace took hold. And the middle class grew and grew. We had 35% of America was unionized by 1947. When the Republicans finally got control of both the House and the Senate, although they didn't have the presidency, so they couldn't undo Social Security, which they'd been trying to do ever since it was passed in 37. But they couldn't undo that. But they were able to slow down the Wagner Act. So in 1947, over the veto of Harry Truman, over the veto, they ran this through over his veto, the Republicans passed the Taft-Hartley Act that gave individual states the right to essentially opt out of the Wagner Act and be what they called right-to-work states. Really what it was employers' right to say, no, you can't have a union here, and now, you know, welcome to Walmart world. We had 35% unionization at that time. It slowly declined down to 25% when Reagan came in, and now the private sector unionization in the United States, around 8-9%. As a result of 25, 26 years of war on organized labor, war on the middle class, war on working people by wealthy Republican fat cat interests in the United States. Pure and simple. Time for a Bolton delay alert. The Washington Post, this is from the Center for American Progress, the Washington Post reports new evidence that President Bush's United Nations nominee John Bolton tried to manipulate intelligence and intimidate experts into following his personal policy agenda. John S. Wolfe, who served as Assistant Secretary of State for Nonproliferation and as President Bush's senior envoy to the Middle East, told Senate staff members that Bolton had indeed tried to punish two State Department officials because they disagreed with him on nonproliferation issues. And Alan Foley, this is a new one, Alan Foley, who ran the CIA's Weapons of Mass Destruction Office, told the committee that Bolton, and I quote, tried to fire a national intelligence officer, end quote, who believed that Bolton was exaggerating evidence about weapons of mass destruction, in this case on Cuba. Bolton, an exaggerator of weapons of mass destruction, tries to do political payback to punish the people who are pointing out that he is lying to we the people. This is the kind of man George W. Bush would want to have at the United Nations. This is the kind of man that all the cons want to have at the United Nations. Why? Because he's a company guy. He's the type of guy who will do what they say. He's the type of guy who, regardless of morality, believes the ends justify the means, and he will push things until he gets his way. He's the kind of guy who will do it for the party, forget the country. It doesn't matter what's best for the United States in John Bolton's mind. That's clear from his service record. It doesn't matter what's best for the United States. It doesn't matter what's best for the consumer. It doesn't matter what's best in the interest of world peace. What matters is who has power. This is a kiss-up, kick-down guy. This is a guy who understands one thing and one thing only, and that's power. On the delay side of the delay Bolton alert, Jack Abramoff breaks his silence about investigations. This a headline by David Finkel in the Washington Post yesterday. And here, Jack Abramoff finally gets right to the heart of the matter. This is something I've been telling you for years on this program and writing about, that this is really what it's all about. I mean, this is really the horror story of American democracy right now. Is that a corporation can come in to the United States Congress and spend a few million dollars and get, in exchange for that, billions of dollars in profits. Look at the millions of dollars given to George W. Bush by the oil and gas industry and the billions that they will make if his energy bill passes, just in the welfare payments that they get, $8 to $12 billion in welfare payments. Look at the millions of dollars the pharmaceutical industry gave to the Bush administration and various Republicans in Congress, and the billions of dollars that they're making in the Medicare bill that requires that the government cannot negotiate drug prices with pharmaceutical companies but has to pay full retail under all circumstances with regard to Medicare. The Pentagon, of course, can continue to negotiate prices, but not Medicare. That's because they're not trying to... with regard to Medicare. The Pentagon, of course, can continue to negotiate prices, but not Medicare. That's because they're not trying to kill off the Pentagon. They are trying to kill off Medicare. Mark my words. It'll be the next big crisis. Oh, we've got to do something about Medicare. We've got to convert it from an entitlement program to a welfare program. We've got to do away with these entitlements. An entitlement program is something that everybody's entitled to. Social Security, Medicare, everyone has access to it. It's a right of citizenship. A welfare program is something for the poor. Welfare programs are easy to kill off because the poor don't have much sympathy and the poor tend not to be a big voting bloc. And that's why George W. Bush wants to convert Social Security into a welfare program by means testing it, by saying that the wealthy people won't receive Social Security benefits, which means it's now a poverty program. And mark my words, they will be doing the same thing with Medicare in the next couple of years, assuming that they continue to hold the kind of power that they have today. But in any case, my point is that Jack Abramoff finally has come out and said, hey guys, don't you... to save billions is just good business. You get that? Now the lobbyists are coming right out and saying it. We give a few million to the politicians, we make billions. Same thing with the estate tax. You've got the Mars family out there arguing for this and a number of other very, very wealthy families saying, you know, hereditary wealth is a good thing. Well, I'd say hereditary comfort is a good thing. But if we end up in this country with 8 or 10 or 12 families, or even 20 or 30 or 50 families or 100 families that basically control 70, 80, 90% of the wealth in this country, we are no longer a democracy, we're an oligarchy. We've become a banana republic. Abramoff called his Indian clients, quote, sophisticated business people, end quote, in the interview, which is in stark contrast to the terms he used in private emails. In his private correspondences, speaking of the Native American tribes that he was representing, and for whom one of the tribes he really apparently screwed, another one of the tribes apparently got a really good deal. They made out very well. He was representing two different tribes with competing interests at the same time. Some would call that an ethical dilemma. In the world of Abramoff and Tom DeLay, that's simply business as usual. In fact, in his private emails released by the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, he referred to his clients, at least the ones who didn't get the billions on their investment of millions, as stupid, moronic, idiots, troglodytes, and monkeys. Now, this is a guy that the TV news networks are doing everything they can to try and rehabilitate his image, because we can't have people thinking poorly of those lobbyists. After all, the TV networks hire a bunch of them themselves. See, do you get it? The media in the United States, the corporate-owned media in the United States, the great big corporate-owned media in the United States, has as much invested in keeping this system afloat as does Tom DeLay and Jack Abramoff. They're not going to blow the lid on these things in any really big way. They're not going to make it into a big deal if they can avoid it. Even as the Senate is investigating, here you have Congress investigating Jack Abramoff. Now, just consider what that takes. You have George W. Bush and others in the Bush administration who have clearly committed felonies, treason, outing a CIA agent, bringing down an entire counterterrorism operation, leading to the possible death of CIA assets all over the world. And yet George W. Bush, I don't know if we're going to find a senior administration official. You have major felonies have been created by this administration. So you can see that the bar has to be pretty high, very high, before the Republicans are going to say, okay, we'll investigate somebody. And they're investigating Jack Abramoff. That's got to mean that you know, what he has done, he must have stuck it to a Republican as well. I mean, what other possible explanation could there be? This, you know, in a single-party state, in single-party rule, in a Stalinist state, You only go after the people who buck the Stalinist system, right? You don't go after anybody else. So here we have Tom DeLay's close friend, Jack Abramoff, the guy whose credit card Tom DeLay's travel expenses were put on. They were put on Jack Abramoff's American Express card. This guy now saying in an interview with the Washington Post, it's just good business sense to invest a few million in corrupt politicians like George W. Bush and Tom DeLay to make billions in corporate profits or to save billions in taxes. Do you think this system stinks? How about getting some true reform? How about some real election reform here in the United States? You can speak out yourself. Call your member of Congress, 1-877-SOB-USOB, if you want to let your Congress critter know.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Got to go back. We've got to go back. Got to go back.
And welcome back, my friends.
Got to go back. For the healing.
Speaking of healing, Andy Stevenson is an activist. He's worked with Bev Harris and others on the issue of voting fraud and that sort of thing. And he has to have an operation. He has pancreatic cancer. And like 45 million other Americans, he's not insured. And the hospital wants $50,000 for the surgery. And I sent out a letter to 11,000 some odd people on my personal email list, people who, for one of our newsletters, over the weekend. And Mark Crispin Miller has spammed on this. Cindy Asner has spammed on this. Hey, let's help out Andy. And Shireen in the chat room tells me that Andy's fundraiser is at $24,400 and change right now, which is great. He's about halfway to what he needs. But you can find out more about that if you go to opednews.com. Rob Qual's website is one of the, in fact, I think it's the only one that actually picked up that story that I wrote. I think the rest of them were concerned that it seemed too much like, you know, the can on the counter in the 7-Eleven, too much like a fundraising pitch. It was really, you know, I wrapped it in a rant about our medical system is broken. Why do we have to have situations like this? Only in America is this happening. The rest of the world looks at us and thinks we're crazy. But nonetheless, anyhow, that's the situation with Andy. And then Hobgob in our chat room. And by the way, you can get to our chat room, live chat room, if you go to TomHartman.com and click on live chat. Hobgob says, Tom, yesterday on morning shows, repugs were saying this government that we have today is what Jefferson wanted. They called it a Jeffersonian government they're running. Oy, as my competitor Al Franken would say, oy. It's just tragic. I wrote a book called What Would Jefferson Do? Specifically to try and take back Jefferson from the right wing. Because the right wing has done such a marvelous job of selectively borrowing Jefferson's comments that they make it look like he was some sort of raving loony con. Jefferson very much was in favor of strong states and a weak federal government. And we changed that with the Civil War. That was when the big transition happened. And so I suspect that he would have a few problems with that. But Jefferson was a progressive. Jefferson was a liberal. Just no two ways about it. No way around it. I'm sorry. And he was a patriot. And these guys in the White House and in Congress are none of the above. Tragically for America. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming down all over the planet on the Sirius radio satellite radio system, on radio stations from coast to coast, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365's American DC. Took a look at their number one rated television program, The Phil Donahue Show. Their number one rated television program. It got higher ratings than Chris Matthews. It got higher ratings than Joe Scarborough. It got higher ratings than any other program on MSNBC. When defense contractor General Electric, who owns MSNBC, took a look at this program, they decided to pull the plug on it, even though it was making more money than any of their other programs, because they pulled the plug because Phil Donahue was speaking out against the war in Iraq. And that's something you don't do on a network owned by a defense contractor. You don't speak out against the war in Iraq. It's just not right. It's just not allowable. It's just not tolerable. And so MSNBC got rid of their most profitable program, The Phil Donahue Show, because they were concerned that Phil Donahue was speaking out against the war in Iraq before it happened. Now, the Reich Wing has moved to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Kenneth Tomlinson reports to the Center for American Progress, the Progress Report. Kenneth Tomlinson, close friend of Uber strategist Karl Rove, and an individual who has contributed thousands to fellow conservatives over the past decade, is starting to flex his muscles in his capacity as chairman of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Are you getting this? Karl Rove, who brought us the October surprise, who brought us the Reagan-Bush campaign, who brought us the Bush Jr. campaign. By the way, George W. Bush hates being called Jr. Absolutely hates it. Anybody who calls him Jr. around him is like barred, expelled. He hates it. So here we have Karl, one of the few ways that you can actually get under his skin. So here you have Karl Rove, who brought us George Bush Sr. and Jr. And one of his closest friends, Kenneth Tomlinson, is now the head of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And he is, quote, aggressively pressing public television to correct what he and other conservatives consider liberal bias, end quote. In one case, Tomlinson went so far as to hire an outside contractor, having neither consulted nor informed his board, in order to keep track, and I'm quoting, keep track of the guests' political leanings on one program now with Bill Moyers, end quote. Boy, I can see why Bill Moyers is no longer there. Can you imagine an outside contractor coming in? We got to keep track of the guests on this program. Although the Corporation for Public Broadcasting was purposefully designed as an independent body, Tomlinson was apparently following the directives of Bush administration officials when he, quote, hired the director of the White House Office of Global Communications as a senior staff member. Yes, you got it right. A senior staff member now at the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is a former senior staffer of the White House Office of Global Communications. Then, while still under employment at the White House, this woman who he had just hired into Corporation for Public Broadcasting, quote, helped draft guidelines governing the work of two ombudsmen whom the corporation recently appointed to review the content of public radio and television broadcasts, end of quote. The chief executive of the public broadcasting system and other leaders in the public broadcasting community are more than displeased with Tomlinson's actions, seeing them as a threat to editorial independence. Gee, there's still some spine left over there. Let's see how long it takes for him to drive them out or beat them out. And one former member of the board stated Tomlinson had, quote, an increasingly and disturbingly aggressive desire to be more involved and to push programming in a more conservative direction, end quote. At a party last November, Tomlinson told fellow CPB and PBS officials that, quote, they should make sure their programming better reflected the Republican mandate, end quote. But now, Tomlinson says, it was just a joke. It was just in jest. It was just a joke. I really didn't mean it. I was just kidding, he says, when he said to fellow officials at CPB and PBS that, quote, you should make sure your programming better reflects the Republican mandate, end quote. And I assume by Republican mandate he was not speaking of Jeff Gannon. Although maybe he was. Maybe he was advocating in favor of the Teletubbies, the gay Teletubby. Maybe when he said Republican mandate, nah, I don't think so. It's not even funny. You know, it's tragic. Arnold is starting to flop in California. Have you caught this? We're on radio stations up and down the West Coast here. The reviews are in. Be interesting to hear from our listeners in California what you think of this. The reviews are in. By the way, Louise, I see somebody on hold here, but I see no information about them on the call screening software. So I don't have a name. I can't, you know. Ah, it's Rich. Let's just toss Rich on the air. Rich has been sitting here waiting for 13 minutes. Hey, Rich, thanks for calling.
Oh, no problem, Tom. I was just listening. Hey, you know, earlier you were talking about your friend who needs this operation, right?
Yeah, Andy Stevenson. He's actually an acquaintance. You know, I've never met him face-to-face. I've just talked to them on the phone and sort of worked cooperatively with him in exposing some of the frauds down in Florida.
I see. Hey, well, a couple weeks ago, did you happen to catch the 60 Minutes program they had about patients leaving America and going to Thailand or India?
India it was. Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did see that segment.
Yeah, it was amazing. I didn't know if he'd heard about it or if that was maybe something that your friend could look into, because it was pretty interesting how these people were getting these operations done for like a fraction of the cost with incredible health care, you know.
Yeah. What it really was a promotion of the privatization of health care.
That
was the subtext of the story. Who was it? CBS, who does 60 Minutes. What CBS was really trying to do is they were really trying to say, hey, in a system where health care is privatized, the wealthy people have wonderful health care. And by the way, Americans, compared to India, you are all the wealthy people. And so even middle class Americans can go to, or upper middle class, if you can afford, you know, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 for an operation, $20,000, $30,000, you can go to India and have all this wonderful health care. And isn't that marvelous? And therefore, shouldn't we just think that the best thing in the world is to have not public health insurance, not public health care, but private health care?
Oh, I got suckered on that one.
Yeah, me too at first. I was watching that going,
great. Thanks for pointing me that out to me. That's fantastic.
You've always got to ask the question, you know, why are they running this story?
Right, exactly. Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay,
yeah, bye-bye. Thanks for the call. And as far as Andy, you know, I don't know what they're doing about cancer in India. That there actually is a doctor over there who's doing a fairly good job of a certain particular type of orthopedic surgery that doesn't involve hip replacements, and that should have been, in my opinion, the focus of the story. Why don't we do this kind of surgery here? Because basically what he's doing is he's taking the hip out and he's like sanding down the hip joint and putting it back together, whereas here what we do is we break off the top of that bone or saw off the top of that bone and put a titanium one in there and then put a socket inside the hip socket, so you've got now a metal joint. And he says that, you know, for a fraction of the cost, he's getting the same kind of results for people who need hip replacement therapy. And why don't we do that here? Well, because it's a fraction of the cost. And here, healthcare is all about who can make the most profit, who can make the most money. Anyhow, Scott in San Diego's on the line. Hey, Scott, I see that from the progress report today, it says the reviews are in. 18 months into his starring role as California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger is already looking like Gray Davis Redux. You get that sense there in San Diego, Scott?
We're actually very happy here in San Diego about what's happening to Arnold because he's losing all of his major initiatives. And he's going down. He has gotten so many people upset, the fire department, the police department, the nurses, the teachers. I mean, the list goes on when he stole their pension money. And they have been extremely active of fighting back and saying, we're the nurses that take care of you. We're not a special interest. And he has been taking special interest money from drug companies.
Right.
It's very clear.
From the beginning. And he had that secret meeting with Ken Lay back just before the California energy crisis at the Beverly Hills Hotel. Ken Lay and a bunch of other energy industry executives. And then the energy crisis hits. And then all of a sudden it's like, hey, let's replace Gray Davis. And guess who's the next governor? Arnold Schwarzenegger. Coincidence or conspiracy?
Well, his thing is actually the case came up and we were supposed to get a refund because I have a 2,000 square foot home and I was paying $500 in power bills a month. This hit us hard.
Wow.
And it was pretty bad. A lot of businesses went out of business because of this. But we were supposed to get a refund on that. We were supposed to get some of the money back, and Arnie, well, he just decided to be really nice to the good old folks at Enron and reduce the amount of money that they owe us in California. It was just a real sweet deal for them.
The headline on the Ironic Times today, California still leads the nation in smog, most of it coming from the governor's Hummers and cigars.
we'll all here be the first to agree. We had a great Earth Day yesterday, Tom, here in San Diego. We're really united down here.
You mean May Day?
No, we had an Earth Day yesterday.
Earth Day celebration
at Balboa Park.
Oh, okay. I thought Earth Day was a couple of weeks ago.
Well, I did too, but we celebrated a little late. This is California.
Okay.
I understand.
Yes,
we're just
there, you go. Just getting around to it.
Down here, you know?
Right.
But we are active with our radio station, KLSD, and a lot of us get together regularly now and exchange emails, exchange ideas. We have a meetup here in San Diego Wednesday night to get together and discuss where we're going.
Yeah.
I have to say, this environment has so energized a lot of us. As we were talking yesterday in front of the booth, they were broadcasting live. We were all once centrists. I mean, many of us were talking to them. We were all centrists until the past 4 years. And
yeah.
We have been turned increasingly liberal because we find that our values are expressed there.
That's right. And most people didn't realize it, and they didn't know what was up. And in that regard, as much as it chokes me to say it, it may be that the election of the selection of George W. Bush as president, in some small way, was a blessing to this country, in as much as it woke us up to the insanity of the right wing and these guys who are trying to take over democracy in America.
These are revolutionary times, Tom.
They are, Scott. They absolutely are. And it's a revolution, of course, that has to happen at the ballot box, but they are revolutionary times. Scott, I appreciate the call. Good to hear from
you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. It's 20 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman. This, the radio home of democracy, the true people's radio, the place where smart people get their news.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Your swift boat flyers, you would carry. Who risked his life while you withdrew? And now you're putting kids in harm's way. Does your conscience bother you? Tell the truth.
And welcome back, my friends. Helps if you turn up the volume control, doesn't it? Or pot up the mic, as we say in the radio business. Welcome back. What's going on here? We had an emergency broadcast signal came through just a minute ago on the system here in the studio at KPOJ in Portland. And I thought, has Mount St. Helens blown? So I shut off the mic to listen to it. Anyhow... Ellen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service, our Washington, D.C. bureau chief and correspondent. And Ellen, by the way, when we're finished with this conversation, I'm going to drop you back on hold because Louise wants to have a word with you, if that's possible.
That is just fine.
Okay, great. So what's up in Washington?
Okay, well, at the White House today, they're talking about North Korea and how they need to get back to the table on North Korea. Hello.
Yeah. How about getting to the table in the first place?
Yeah. I thought you would, you know, I kind of set you up for that one. I knew it would send you into action.
Well, Ellen, you know, how many nukes did the North Koreans develop under the Clinton administration?
Zero.
How many have they developed under the Bush administration?
Well, we don't know yet.
Well, at least six is what they're saying.
But there could be many more.
Yeah.
Now, I just also want to tell you what the president did today, or actually, I'm sorry, later this afternoon. I believe it's Al Roker from the Today Show.
Yeah.
Is going to do, they're interviewing the president and first lady about, for a special about America's love for pets.
Oh, my. This is the same as the, you and I were talking about this morning, the humanizing of George W. Bush. He is
viewed... That's right, and bringing law into it at every situation.
Right. He is being viewed increasingly as a right-wing crank who, you know, as a Jonathan Edwards kind of character, the Jonathan Edwards from the 1670s in Massachusetts Bay, who gave the preached the fiery sermons and then went out and burned the witches, or hung the witches, actually, in Massachusetts. They hung them.
That's right.
Well, this was actually post-Salem. They were hanging them right up and, you know, right up until into Ben Franklin's childhood. It was one of the reasons why he left Massachusetts. And so and people are seeing him as a right-wing crank, and so they're trying to reform his image.
Right, and Laura is their best weapon.
Yeah, and just as Barbara was for her husband.
And don't forget, we've brought Karen Hughes back to the State Department, and a lot of people think the reason that she is at the State Department is not for public diplomacy, but if they ever want to run Condi for anything, she's ready for prime time.
Or if they just want to do damage control.
Well, perhaps, but I don't think Karen Hughes is just for damage control at this point. I think she's considered a molder.
Yeah, you don't think that Karen Hughes is behind this let's bring Al Roker thing in?
Well, no, because I think that that's more Karl Rove. I think Karen is at the State Department busy worrying about how to deal with Condi.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, today at the press conference today, Social Security came up yet again. And today Scott McClellan says that the Dems need to come up with options because all they can say is no.
Right. Well, we have 40 years before we have to really worry about it. I'm more concerned about Medicare, which went bankrupt by Georgia's definitions this year.
Well, rumor has it that when Senate and House is in this week, Senate is not, that they are going to be taking up that as a real focus.
Yeah.
And the Dems are going to be, that's sort of the new battleground of a fight. The other battleground of a fight that we're going to see, of course, is Bill Frist and his run for president. And he's over in the Middle East this week.
Right.
He's, you know, doing the little Iraq, Jordan, Palestinian Authority, Egypt. He's making rounds so that he can, you know, puff up his presidential image.
Yeah, which is, he's got to be one of the most dangerous men, and I don't say that in the favorable way, like Ben Franklin liked to be spoken of, or Limbaugh refers to himself. But Bill Frist is really and truly one of the most dangerous men in America, destructive to democracy.
One fast one. Supreme Court is going to consider review for schools that fire military recruiters at law schools.
Oh, my. Okay. And the news just keeps getting grimmer. Ellen, hang on for just a minute for Louise. Thanks so much for the call and the report. I do appreciate
it.
It's good talking to you. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program.
But, Dad...
Tyler, we've been over this 3 times. There'll be no adults at Ed's house Friday night. No party for you.
But the whole class is invited.
Making sure an adult's there isn't easy. But if you don't, your kid's more likely to do drugs.
You were so stubborn.
Well, now you know where you got it from.
Do it. It'll always be worth it. Parents, the anti-drug. To learn more, call 1-800-788-2800 or visit theantidrug.com.
Paid for by Office of National Drug Control Policy.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Got a song about a soldier riding somewhere on a train. Empty sleep into his shoulder. some pills to ease the pain.
And welcome back, my friends. 25, 26, 27, no, coming up on 26 minutes before the hour. Or 33, coming up on 34 past the hour. There's your time check. However you like it, digital or analog. Welcome back to the program. Tom Hartman with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894. The chat room, TomHartman.com. Click live chat if you want to drop in and say hi. So much more news here. Interesting, Senator George Miller on TV this weekend. I'll tell you about that after I take a couple of calls here. Let's go to the phone lines. Logan in New York City on the air with us. Hey, Logan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I was wondering if you knew about what was the status of Clinton's bill on the voting stuff.
Senator Clinton's bill to make voting machines accountable, basically, to have a paper trail. And in fact, her bill even went farther than Rush Holt's bill, which is in the House, the Senate bill that Hillary Clinton introduced would make it a crime to do the things that Kenneth Blackwell did in Ohio, for an elected official to also be the, or for an appointed, whatever, for the person who's running the election to also be the head of a campaign in the election. That bill has not been allowed out of committee.
By who?
By the Republicans.
And have you heard about the Center for American Voting Rights?
And I should add, by the way, therefore, it will not get an up or down vote because the Republicans won't let it out of committee.
No, but the Center for
American Voting Rights. Perhaps there's a whole bunch of different groups that have very, very similar sounding names, so I'm not sure.
No, well, this is the one that's composed of people from the Bush-Cheney campaign and the RNC. All they talk about is voter fraud and
the phony bunch. Yeah, the phony baloney bunch that was the first to testify before the congressional inquiry and all that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So nobody's investigating that, or
no. So to the best of my knowledge, nobody in Congress. See, the problem is that the Republicans control both the House and the Senate and the White House and the Supreme Court. And therefore, they get to decide what gets investigated and what doesn't. I mean, the Clinton administration has something like 50, 60, 70 investigations while Bill Clinton was president because the Republicans controlled the Senate and the House, and they could do it. They could go after him. That has not been the case now. The Democrats don't control the House or the Senate, and it requires a majority vote in a committee to do any kind of an investigation, with the single exception of the internal committee to the House. That would be the House Ethics Committee. And historically, you know, for the last couple hundred years, the House Ethics Committee, four Republicans and four Democrats, the rule was that if there's a deadlock, if there's a tie, which there usually is, about whether or not to investigate a member, then that automatically triggers an investigation. So if enough Democrats think that somebody's done something wrong and it's worth investigating, even if the Republicans control the House or the other way around, there will be an investigation.
We're going to have another fake election. That's what you're saying.
Well, what they did was they changed the rules on the House Ethics Committee so that a tie meant no investigation. And that's why Tom DeLay hasn't been kicked out of Congress. And last week, Denny Hastert said, okay, everybody's yelling and screaming. We will change the rules back and we will investigate Tom DeLay in their own good time and in their own sloppy sort of way. So, I'm not holding my breath for anything on that. But the bottom line with regard to the elections, yeah, I think that there's a very high probability we're going to have another rigged election. In fact, I'd say almost a certainty. And that's why I've been pushing really hard for the Democratic Party, at the level of the Democratic Party. And if anybody who knows Howard Dean is listening, or if Howard Dean, if you are listening right now, please consider this as a serious suggestion. The Democratic Party should be organized. They should be working with an independent group, an absolutely independent group, such as John Zogby's group, you know, one of the polling groups, to organize nationwide exit polls for the 2006 election so they can identify those precincts where voting fraud is taking place, and then they can investigate them the way that the Republicans are going after Christine Gregoire in Washington State. Yeah, it is possible to investigate voting fraud. Just look at Washington State. The Republicans know how to do it. They're doing a very good job of it. The Democrats have been absolutely incompetent at it because historically they've all been wimps. It's time for them to get their spine. Howard Dean knows how to do that, and I hope he takes that message to heart.
Thanks, Tom.
Yep, Logan, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you, and thanks for listening. Harriet in Seattle's on the line, 1-866-889-8894. Hey, Harriet.
Hi, Tom. Well, you mentioned Chris Gregoire. It's still puzzles me no end that when Rossi was ahead by 42 votes, you never heard peep one about any felons anywhere. Matter of fact, all Chris Vance could do was keep encouraging Gregoire to do the right thing and concede.
Right.
Oh, well. Anyway, I have another thing. On a slightly bright note, considering the, the doom and gloom of the normal scene, I have been dealing in the past couple of weeks with some executive offices, corporate-level executive offices, regarding overseas call centers,
uh-huh.
The ones where you get stuck talking to someone who doesn't understand English.
Yeah, that happened to me recently when I was getting tech support for a computer of a major manufacturer who shall remain nameless.
Yes, yes.
But all of their tech support. And they run ads on TV where, you know, the guy's in the middle of the night, he's waking up going, "Are you there?" And you see this nice kind of, looks like, you know, your average kind of middle-class American kid,
right.
You know, waspy
right.
kid going, "Yes, we're here." Well, actually, it's being answered by Rajid in Bombay.
Yes.
Or actually, the guy that I got was not in Bombay. He was in Bangalore, I think.
Well, the one last one I got was Malaysia. So I think more people need to do this. I end up calling the executive office, and I let them have it, basically. And in both instances...
The executive office of who? Of what?
The corporation.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's easy enough to get through. And the thing I'm finding interesting is in both of them, they are getting enough complaints. They are now starting to realize this is not doing their company any good. And the one I spoke to a few days ago said they are in the process now of looking for a site in the United States to pull their call center back into the country and hire Americans.
Yeah, Lou Dobbs did a show on this a week or so ago, and what's happening is that a lot of, they're calling it rural insourcing, a lot of the rural areas in the United States where there's still relatively cheap American labor to be found, because, you know, in the large cities or in large industrial areas or in the growing population areas where a lot of these companies are sited, it's hard to find somebody who will work for $5.15 an hour. But in Appalachia, it's easy to find somebody who will work for $5.15 an hour, and relatively speaking, relatively easy. And so what they're doing is they're building call centers in rural areas, because it doesn't matter where you are. They're basically strip mining the United States looking for cheap labor, but at least it's back here in the United States. So it's a good step in the right direction. It's not the whole right direction, because we need to have minimum wage laws that raise the minimum wage to the point where if somebody's earning a living, they're actually earning a living. But nonetheless, you know, step by step.
Well, the problem with rural insourcing in the high-tech field is you need the high-tech people to be able to handle the questions.
Yeah.
Because you could end up with the same problem you have now in Malaysia or Bangalore.
Right, if they just read a script.
Yep.
Yeah, I tell you, twice I've had the guy just read the script to me. Harriet, thanks a lot for the call and raising these issues. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Bob in Grand Rapids on the line. Hey, Bob.
Good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon. What's up?
Well, I was just kind of scanning the band when on one of your commercials there. I went over and I was listening to your enemy there on the other side, Mr. Limbaugh, for a few seconds. And he's making General Motors sound as though it's a welfare corporation these days.
Because?
Because, well, they're giving out insurance to their employees.
Oh, how dare they?
See, oh, well, I know it. I mean, he makes it sound as though the workers of this country are... the ones that are causing General Motors to have its problems.
Well, there is a real problem there that is worth identifying. The cons will never identify it in an honest way, though. And that is that the United States is the only nation in the world where the cost of health insurance comes from the employers.
Mm-hmm.
Every place else in the world, I mean all of the industrialized world, the industrialized nations of the world, the cost of health insurance is spread over the taxes that cover all of society. Corporations pay for it, individuals pay for it. You know, it's just a broad tax. Whereas here in the United States, health care is paid by employers. And so there is a lot of truth to the fact that one of the reasons why car manufacturers in the United States have difficulty competing with car manufacturers in, for example, Japan or Germany, is that there's a couple of $1,000 worth of health insurance in a car manufactured in the United States, whereas there's none of that expense in a car manufactured in Germany or Japan.
Well, you know, this is
what
true.
That means, though, is that we should go to single-payer health care in the United States, not that we should stop paying health care to our workers.
This is true. I was up in Canada. I went fishing in Canada for a number of years, and I had an opportunity to talk to the people up there. And you know all these old horror stories that Mr. Limbaugh likes to go about spreading about how terrible the health care is up there.
Yeah.
Nobody, outside of a few rare exceptions, ever ran into anything like what he's ever described.
Oh, of course not.
And
I lived in Vermont for 10 years and you know, right across the border, 2 hours from Montreal. And there, I'm telling you, I've been to the doctor's office. There wasn't a line of Canadians standing there in front of me.
That's right. But no, I was just amazed that he had the mitigated gall to sit there and blame the workers in this country for getting their insurance from them, and how their pension fund, their pensions that they have to pay and all this was causing the problem. But you know what a lot of people don't know about General Motors is that the employees, when they retire after 30 years, get $24,000 a year pension,
right,
and their health insurance. But
right,
when they turn age 62 or 65, whenever they decide to take their Social Security, that is deducted from their pension.
Right, and that's a relatively recent innovation. That's in the last 10 years.
Yeah, but people just seem to think that they're being handed everything on a silver platter, and they're taking and putting an awful lot of money back into the system just to keep it all afloat.
And they work their butts off all their lives. I mean, that's the basic premise of fairness in America, is that if you do your job, if you play your role in society, whether that role is an exalted one as president or a humble one as an auto worker, if you play your role in society, if you do your job, if you show up for work, if you put in your time, if you participate and you do it honestly and you do it with integrity and you give your life to that work, then you don't have to worry about your old age. I mean, this is not rocket science. This is the way the rest of the world perceives fairness.
It's,
except for the cons in the United States, the millionaires and billionaires, the Limbaughs and whatnot, who I don't have to worry about how much things cost, he would say.
Yeah.
You know, those folks, you know, well, yeah, they're
like
saying,
hey,
we don't want to pay any taxes to pay for this.
Like he always said, he'd never participate in a recession because he'd spend his way out of it. Well, he's taken enough from the business community, he ought to know how to do it. But
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, well,
but,
let's...
one point that lady that was on just in front of me, she made a point about workers and stuff
yeah,
like
Harriet
that.
In Seattle, yes.
Well, you know, these companies get exactly what they pay for. If you have good wages, good benefits, you can get the high-class, high, hard-working people. My wife works in the fast food industry, and this is no knock to the fast food industry, but they have people come in and, you want me to do what? You want me to... I'm not going to do that for this kind of money. And they walk out the door.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just one of those things.
The reality is that...
You get what you pay for.
Yeah, and the cons love to say, oh, there's all these jobs. We have to have all these immigrant workers, for example, in the United States, because there's all these jobs that Americans won't do. Wrong. There's all these jobs that Americans won't do at that salary.
Well,
Americans will clean toilets. Americans will empty sewers. Americans will, Americans will pick vegetables. I picked apples when I was a kid. I mean, not when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, but, and I was with a bunch of other people who have most of them were adults. This is what they did in northern Michigan, up there picking apples and around Holland, Michigan. I mean, people will do these jobs if they're decently paid.
That's correct. Now, it's just amazing how it happens, because up here we're in the Grand Rapids area and probably where you were born, too. There's an awful lot of orchards and stuff like that. And the workers, if you look at what they get to live in and what the owners get to live in, there's a difference of night and day. It's
yeah.
Like, they're getting paid 400 times what the little poor guy working out in the orchard is getting paid.
Yeah, and it's gotten worse over the years. It's
well,
yeah.
Tom, there was an article in one of the papers, and I think it might have even been in the Grand Rapids Press, about this one CEO that was making $53 million a year plus his fringe benefits and bonuses. You know, I don't know about you, but I'm retired now, but that, to me, just seems that there's too many like him that are sucking at the breasts of the industrial payroll.
Yeah. They're actually sucking at the veins of the industrial payroll, Bob. Bob, thanks a lot for your call. I do appreciate it. They are bloodsuckers. There's no other way to put it. You got Jack Welch on the cover of Newsweek. I was just walking through the lunchroom here at the radio station, and there's Jack Welch on the cover of Newsweek, and with some slogan like "How to be successful" or something. The way that Jack Welch got successful was he was the guy who invented outsourcing to India. Jack Welch, when he was head of GE, General Electric, went over to India and trying to sell GE products to the Indians. And the folks in India said to him, there was a company over there that said to him, you know, we can do for you things that Americans are doing for you, and we can save you money. We can do it much less expensively. And Welch was, oh, really? And Jack Welch started the stampede to outsource white-collar jobs to India. That's his claim to fame. And so what does he get for that? He gets a best-selling book, and he's on the cover of Newsweek. There's something wrong with this picture. In the meantime, you've got Senator George Miller, the Republican from Virginia, on NBC's Meet the Press yesterday saying that elderly people, that what we should do is we should allow people with their private accounts and Social Security to put that money in their homes so that when they retire, they can sell their house and live on the money. I am not kidding you. He says, in the event that a personal savings account approach is taken, allowing Americans to invest in a home, in addition to right now it's stocks, bonds, and other financial interests, if people can invest in their own home, they'll know it, they'll understand it, they'll take care of it, they'll enjoy it, and they don't worry about mergers and acquisitions and scandals and market share. And by the time they retire, they're going to have a pretty good nest egg, and they won't need as big a house usually because they don't want to be cutting grass and trimming hedges, and that is good for the economy as well. You get this? Invest in your Social Security money in your home so that when you get old, you can sell your home and live in a tar paper shack while you'll have enough money to pay for your pharmaceuticals and for your food. What a marvelous idea. Thanks so much, George Miller, Republican from Virginia. His phone number, 877-SOB-USOB. Thanks so much.
Attention.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Now that things have changed, everything's carefully rearranged. Not a thing is done, except for reason.
And welcome back, my friends. Andy Stevenson, who I mentioned, the tireless campaigner for democracy in America, who we were trying to raise some money to help him get his surgery for pancreatic cancer, has dropped into our chat room. If you want to say hi, go to TomHartman.com and click live chat. Pat Robertson, our judges are worse than Al Qaeda. You get this? He's on TV with George Stephanopoulos this weekend, and he gets into this hyperbolic rant about over 100 years. I think the gradual erosion of the consensus that's held our country together is more serious than a few bearded terrorists who fly into buildings. Anything for a headline from billionaire Robertson, the guy who sold his Christian Broadcasting Network for $1 billion cash. Stephanopoulos says, you really mean to say that these guys are worse than the Nazis? These guys are worse than Japan in World War II? That this is worse than the Civil War? These judges? Which judges? What, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is worse than Al-Qaeda? Yes, I really believe that, says Pat Robertson. I think they're destroying the fabric that holds our nation together. The fabric that holds our nation together? Wow. Wow, 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 wow. It's mind-boggling. Mind-boggling. Bill Frist, Robertson says, I don't see him as a future president. Uh-oh. Uh-oh. Now you've got the right turning on them. By the way, I just have to, in the minute or so we have left here, I got to tell you, Louise and I are doing a contest between the two of us, and if you have any suggestions, I would love to hear them. We got a new telephone number when we moved to Portland, and it turned out that there's like dozens of 800 numbers that terminate into our new home phone number. People are calling from all over the country, trying to call businesses, in some cases apparently still operating businesses, and for some reason, they ring into our house. I called the phone company, and they said it's not our problem, and they said it's Sprint's problem. So I called Sprint, and they said we can't do anything about it. Sorry. So we're now answering the phone. We have this contest between us to see how long we can keep people on the line and what kind of response we can get from them. So we're saying things like, well, I'm sorry, the business is out of business because the owner was a big supporter of George W. Bush, and when he discovered that Bush had lied to him, he went insane. He was running around in traffic going, woo-woo-woo, like Daffy Duck. Or another good one, the owner's been thrown in jail because he was hanging out with George W. Bush, and, well, you know what happens, the Saudis and all that. Whatever. I mean, we're trying to come up with the most outrageous stories we can tell people, hoping that they will then eventually get a hold of the company saying, hey, Sprint's messing with your 800 number, do something about it. Because the person at Sprint just told me, hey, tough luck, buddy. Incredible. If you have suggestions, let us know. Let us know. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. The John Bolton, Tom DeLay, Jack Abramoff, Bush Jr. political death watch continues. How much longer can this administration hold out against the forces of right and good? How much longer can they hold out? How much longer can they keep off the investigators? How much longer can they continue to phony things up? The new scheme is to trot out Laura. When Junior's numbers go in the tank, trot out the little lady. She's nice. She's sweet. Yeah, even though she's a heavy smoker, she knows how to not smoke on television. And somehow the image of Laura Bush smoking, which she does every day, all day, just seems so odd because she has been so well marketed as this absolutely all-American woman, you know, this. And but anyhow, they're going to trot her out. Expect to see more of her in the coming days because Junior's not doing so well. Everybody's getting it. He doesn't get it. Everybody's getting it that he doesn't understand what it's like to be middle class in America. He doesn't understand what it's like to feel that if you lose a paycheck, you're doomed. He has no idea what it feels like to face the possibility of losing your home, of losing your livelihood, of losing everything you've worked for in your life. He has no idea what it must be like to go into enter old age in poverty. It's beyond his experience. He was born a millionaire. His father was born a millionaire. They live in mansions and estates, palaces. And, of course, now his hobby ranch down in Texas. No horses, of course, because he's afraid of horses. But lots of land, big fancy house with a nice facade on the front that looks rather normal and middle class. How long is it going to last? A fourth senior member of Colin Powell's team at the State Department expressed strong reservations on Friday. Strong reservations, by the way, in diplomatic language means, holy cow! Or variations thereof. A fourth senior member of Colin Powell's team at the State Department expressed strong reservations on Friday about the nomination of John R. Bolton as ambassador to the United Nations. Now this... When this is coming from the team of the guy who tried to lie to and manipulate the United Nations, and apparently had some knowledge of the fact that some of the information he was presenting was at the very least questionable, and perhaps he had full knowledge that much of it was actually specious, was made up. The proverbial whole cloth. This time, it's Elizabeth Jones, A. Elizabeth Jones, a veteran diplomat who was the Assistant Secretary of State for Europe and Eurasia in the Bush administration, in the Bush Jr. administration. Ms. Jones joins Lawrence Wilkerson. He was, in the Bush Jr. administration, Mr. Powell's Chief of Staff. Carl W. Ford Jr., who in the Bush Jr. administration was the department's intelligence bureau, headed up the entire intelligence bureau for the State Department. And John R. Wolf, who in the Bush Jr. administration was the Assistant Secretary of State for Nonproliferation. All of these people now have come forward, all of these people who worked with John Bolton when he was at the State Department, and said, this guy should not be our ambassador to the United Nations. No way, shouldn't be, ain't good, don't do it, Wouldn't be prudent. In fact, Ms. Jones said, I don't know if he's incapable of negotiation, but he's unwilling. We don't know if he's not competent or not capable of behaving like a decent human being, if he's not capable of doing a decent job, or if he simply refuses to. Which is it? John E. McLaughlin, a former deputy director of Central Intelligence, used strong language on Friday. Remember John McLaughlin? When George Tenet stepped down, he was the guy running the CIA when John Bolton was working at the State Department. The guy running the CIA when Bolton is at the State Department used strong language on Friday in telling the group, this being the Senate committee, the state that is, you know, that is trying to decide whether or not to recommend Bolton to the whole Senate for an up or down vote on whether or not he should become ambassador. John McLaughlin used strong language on Friday in telling the group that he regarded as totally inappropriate an attempt by Mr. Bolton in 2002. Now, keep in mind, this is in the Bush administration. This is members of the Bush administration with working for the Bush administration criticizing Mr. Bolton when he was working with them in the Bush administration. Totally inappropriate, a 2002 attempt by Bolton to seek the ouster of Fulton Armstrong, the National Intelligence Officer for Latin America. Why? Because Bolton had hatched this wild-eyed idea. Hey, here's another thing we can terrify America with. We can scare the heck out of people by convincing them that Cuba has germ warfare. That'll really work. We need to whip up another war. Hey, let's go after Cuba. This is Nixon. I'm serious. Nixon, back in 1958, when Nixon, some say allow, the Democrats picked on him, they said he allowed Cuba to go communist. Actually, Nixon supported Castro's revolution against Batista because it was clear that Batista was going to go down. The guy was a toady for the United States. Actually, not so much for the United States. He was a toady for the big sugar companies and for the casino companies. And the latter half of that was at that time, the mob, organized crime. Batista was a toady for the mafia. And the Cubans were over it. They were sick of it. They didn't want this guy there anymore. They said, that's it, no more, you're out. And Batista was overthrown by Castro, who came to power claiming that he was going to install a democracy, that he believed in democracy. Castro, Fidel Castro, who had gone to New York City once to try out for the New York Yankees baseball team. And Castro takes over Cuba, and he goes to Nixon. This was after Eisenhower had his heart attack, and basically Nixon was running the country to a large extent. He goes to Nixon, and he says, we'd like some foreign aid, please, because these companies, they're all pulling out, because they were dealing, you know, with Batista, and he was doing all this stuff under the table. We're going to try and do things up front here. And Nixon says, come on, you're just a little Caribbean country. We can't afford to give you foreign aid. Traditional conservative answer, right? Pull yourself up by your own bootstraps. And so Castro says, remember, he came to us first. And so Castro says, okay, well, who else in the world will help me out? And Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet Union, says, hey, Mr. Castro, I would be happy to help you out. And what do you know, just a few months after the revolution, Castro declares that he is now a communist. And that Cuba is going to become a communist nation as millions of dollars start pouring into Cuba from the Soviet Union. And within a year, well, within a couple of years, you had missiles coming into Cuba from the Soviet Union as well. So anyhow, this is 1958, 1959. And Nixon is just taking all kinds of heat for this. It was blown, you know, Castro went communist, Cuba went communist on Nixon's watch. It was a terrible thing. It was Nixon's fault, blah de blah de blah de blah de blah. And Nixon wants to be president in 1960. Can't have that. Can't have Castro running around if you want to be president. So Nixon puts together a deal. During the spring and summer of 1980, he gets his good friend E. Howard Hunt in from the CIA, and he puts together this deal 10,000 Cubans they pulled together down in Florida. They call it the University of Florida campus. It's a euphemism for the largest CIA station in the world. And they plan an invasion of Cuba that's going to happen in October of 1960. Now, keep in mind, November of 1960, 1 month later, was when the Nixon-Kennedy election was going to be held. No, this stuff did not start with Ronald Reagan and George Bush Sr. stealing the election from Jimmy Carter by cutting a deal with the Ayatollahs. We'll give you missiles after the election if you'll hold the hostages until the election so that we can make Carter look bad and get elected. It didn't start there. It started with Nixon in 1960. And Nixon made that deal, and here's where it gets really interesting. The names of the ships that were scheduled to be part of the Bay of Pigs invasion, which was then had a different name, were the Barbara J. and the Houston. And there were offshore drilling rigs around Cuba that never found any oil. They were represented by representing an oil company that never found any oil. It was called Zapata Oil Company, and they were providing intelligence to Richard Nixon for this October surprise in October of 1960. They were owned by Zapata Oil. In fact, the official CIA code name for the Bay of Pigs invasion was Operation Zapata. Now, who was the president and founder and owner of Zapata Oil Company? George Herbert Walker Bush. So, as I said, this is nothing new. It's been around for a long time. So here you have... Fulton Armstrong, and he's responsible for looking over what's going on in Cuba. He's with the CIA, and his job is to determine, he's the National Intelligence Officer for Latin America. His job is to determine what kind of threat Cuba represents. And John Bolton wants to pull a Richard Nixon. Probably at the suggestion of George W. Bush. And so he's saying, hey, let's go, you know, we need an excuse to invade Cuba. We need another country to invade. We're discovering that when we invade Arab countries, they fight back. It's on the other side of the world. It's expensive. It's a hassle. It wouldn't be much more fun and much easier to simply do what Ronald Reagan did, invade a nearby Latin American country, Grenada, Panama, you know, on and on. Let's go after Cuba. And I don't for a minute think that John Bolton thought this up all on his own. And so Bolton says, let's go after Cuba. We need an excuse, right? We need to sell this to American people. We need to terrify the American people so that they think that Castro is some kind of, you know, the worst guy who ever walked on Earth, et cetera, et cetera. How do we do that? Well, we convince them after the anthrax scare, which we still have no idea where it came from, domestic terrorism, clearly. Or was it the administration? Am I that much of a conspiracy nut? I would, sure. It wouldn't surprise me, I have to say, although I don't know. But anyhow, so Bolton says, okay, there's germs in Cuba. Castro is doing germ warfare. Castro is developing germ warfare. It kind of overlooked the fact that if Castro unleashed germ warfare in Florida, it would be in Cuba the next day. Let's pretend that that's not so, and let's try and scare people with this. And so this guy in the CIA, Fulton Armstrong, says, no, sorry, there's no evidence to back that up. Bolton tries to get him fired. 20 minutes past the hour.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman. Don't worry about a thing.
Every little gonna be all right. As long as we get our voices out there, I'm telling you, there is still hope. As long as we're still on the air, as long as Air America's out there, As long as David Sirota's out there, as long as Mark Crispin Miller's out there, as long as Buzzflash is up, commondreams.org, opednews.com, truthout.org, as long as the folks at Black Box Voting are doing their work, as long as Andy Stevenson is hanging around, we're in good shape. We may be facing some challenges, But we're in good shape. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes and change after the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the program. Thoughts, comments, criticisms, arguments, debates. Dave in Arcata, California on the line. Hey, Dave, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Tom. One of the things that I feel needs to be exposed a bit more, and it's only been making more sense to me recently, and that is that the failure of our main media to address some of the realities that we hear here, they are not just useless. They become an active part of the problem. So many people in this country who truly believe that we have a free press, they say, if all this scheming and deception and manipulation was going on, don't you think we'd be hearing that on Tim Russert? If there is any question about these voting machines, would we not be hearing that on our ABC Evening News?
Right. They don't get it. They don't get it how intimidated and cowed the media is. I mean, look at what they did to Dan Rather. And his report, other than the fact that one of the documents, or a couple of the documents, all of the documents, I suppose you could argue, that he used to back it up as third, fourth, fifth level proof. I mean, he had firsthand eyewitness accounts. That should have been enough. The documents he used were forged, or may have been forged, is still not known. And if they were, I'm absolutely certain this is like Karl Rove bugging his own office back, you know, when Bill Clements was running, when he was running that campaign for governor of Texas. And I'm convinced that if those are forged documents, because it was a Republican blogger who came out with it 20 minutes after the show was over, that they were supplied by the Republicans, first of all. But secondly, look at how they took down Dan Rather, how they destroyed this man's reputation, and how they spun the story. The most Americans now believe that Dan Rather's story was inaccurate. His story was actually accurate. George Bush did avoid service. He did pull on it in the influence of his friends and family. He didn't show up for service for a year. He really was AWOL. He really did commit a felony. None of that stuff now is believed by the American public because these right-wingers, or Reich-wingers, were so successful in just pounding this message. And they're still doing it on the right-wing websites. And so there's a lot of people in the media who are just afraid to take them on.
And their failure, Tom, makes them not just useless, it makes them an active part of the problem, because people think that they're dealing with a free press that would clearly go after a story like that if it's true, and their failure to do it makes them very much a part of the problem.
Yeah, they've become the useful idiots that what's-his-name talked about. Where did that phrase come from?
Useful idiots?
Yeah, it's maybe out of Nazi Germany. I don't remember now. But in any case, yeah, this is you're absolutely right, Dave. And the complicity of the media in all of this is just not a healthy thing.
We'd be far better informed if they just literally took all of those mainstream media channels and shut them down.
I'm not going to go that far. But what I think that should, here's the solution, Dave, and it's very simple. You simply say we're going to enforce the Sherman Antitrust Act. It is no longer possible for big multinational media conglomerates to own television stations, radio stations, and networks. A network has to be its own company, and it can't own other companies, and other companies can't own it. Radio stations, television stations, they have to be their own companies. It's very simple. This isn't rocket science. We simply go back to the way it was for the majority of the history of the United States.
Thank you so much.
Solves the problem. Solves the problem. Dave, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. The big lie, the right wing plays the race card on judicial nominations. You could see this coming a mile away, and yet still they had the audacity to do it, and they may well get away with it. Now we're going to be seeing advertisements about the racist Democrats. I'll tell you about that right after this. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
I've been meek and hard like an oak. I've seen pretty people disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear. If you want me, honey, baby, I'll be here.
And welcome back, my friends. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. GOP-linked group to run ads backing appeals court nominees. This is truly scary. I'm going to get to this in just a minute. First, Andy Stevenson is on the line. Hey, Andy.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. Congratulations on the great work that you are doing to restore democracy to the United States.
Oh, thank you. Listen, the two things I wanted to make a comment on is next Saturday in Columbus, Ohio, I'm going to be doing a teach-in. I'm going to do a training class to teach people how to audit Diebold election systems.
Great. Well, I should, you know, before we talk about this, we should let people know that you have worked with Bev Harris for some time with Black Box Voting, and well, why don't you give your bio real quickly? It's just a sentence.
Well, I was with Black Box Voting. I was with Bev for about 2.5 years, and I'm now with Vote Trust USA. And I'm also working with a group called Velvet Revolution that's calling for divestiture from the voting machine companies if they don't meet certain criteria. And people can see the criteria at velvetrevolution.us.
Okay, great. And there's an article that I wrote about you and your work that's over at opednews.com, just as an FYI for our listeners. Okay, so you're doing a workshop, Andy.
I'm doing a workshop. I'm actually bringing actual examples of poll tapes and audit logs and those types of things so I can show people how to look for problems or errors, because it's up to us now.
Right.
The politicians aren't taking care of business, so, you know, it's up to we the people. And I've been saying this for, you know, 2 years now.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to get back some semblance of fairness in the elections, it's got to be us.
Some semblance of honesty. Fairness would be nice, but honesty, I think, is important. So
yes, you're right. Right. It's vitally important. And
okay. So there's that workshop, and then you said you're doing something else.
Just that. After that, then I go for my hospital stay, and then I'm going to have to fight a new battle, but I'm going to win that one as well. And I also wanted to thank your listeners and you and William Pitt and everybody that has stepped up to the plate and really just, I can't tell you how thankful and grateful I am to everybody that's helped me reach this goal. And the battle I go to fight now, I'm going to fight for y'all because, you know, I know I'm still needed around here for a little while longer anyway.
Thanks, Andy. And let me remind our listeners, we're talking about raising the money for Andy's surgery, and you're still only halfway there, so don't. Please don't stop.
I'm halfway there, but that's halfway is better than where I started a few days ago, where I was sitting here going, well, okay, this is it.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, well, Andy, good luck. Godspeed. And
thank you,
and keep up the good work. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you.
And, thank you. Bye bye.
Yeah. Oh, hey, Andy, quick. You still there?
Yes, sir.
How can people find out more about the workshop you're going to be teaching?
Well,
is there a website?
It's at caseohio.org.
Okay.
Is the group that's sponsoring. That's Susan Truitt and Phil Fry out of Columbus.
CASEohio.org.
Yes, caseohio.org.
Great. So any of our listeners in Ohio, check it out, and who are looking for a reason to have a trip.
Yeah, come on down and meet me and learn how to audit your elections, because Ohio's getting the Diebold optical scans, and it's real important that they know how to do this now.
Okay, great. Andy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Good to hear from you. Yep, keep up the good work. GOP-linked group to run ad-backing appeals court nominees. This proves, in my mind, absolutely proves, it's all about the corporate agenda. It is all about the corporate agenda. They are taking Christians in America, good-hearted, well-intentioned people, as suckers, taking them along for the ride. They're saying it's all about people of faith. No, I'm sorry, it's not about faith. It is about the corporate agenda. Here we have this right-wing group, Progress for America. It grew out of the Swift Boat Veterans for whatever it was, for Bush. And this group, funded with some very well-heeled money, is going to spend $1.5 million on television commercials and $350,000 on radio advertisements over the next 2 weeks to praise Janice Rogers Brown and Priscilla Owen. Now, why Janice Rogers Brown and Priscilla Owen? Well, first of all, they're women, so they seem a little softer to the average person. You can run pictures of them with nice smiles and everything. Now, why don't those Democrats like these women? In fact, you get a twofer. Janice Rogers Brown is also African-American. And already the cons are saying it's a racial thing. They're playing the race card. This, right here, right from the GOP itself, and I quote, "Why are Senate Democrats so afraid of conservative judicial nominees who are African-Americans, Hispanics, Catholics, and women?" You get it? And now they're going to be running this ad saying Janice Rogers Brown and Priscilla Owen, the reason that the Democrats are filibustering Janice Rogers Brown is because she's black. It's got nothing to do with her race. It has to do with the way she has ruled. As to his credit, I suppose, George W. Bush said at his news conference the other night, Janice Rogers Brown, this is the woman that they're saying the Democrats want to filibuster her because she's black. Her actual voting record, her actual position on the issues, consider for a moment, with regard to senior citizens, and I quote, I am quoting Janice Rogers Brown herself, quote, "Today's senior citizens blithely cannibalize their grandchildren because they have the right to get as much free stuff as the political system will permit them to extract." What's she talking about? Social Security. Medicare. It's cannibalization. In fact, she even went farther than that. She says that Social Security is collectivism. It is socialism. Here is Brown on New Deal programs, and I quote, "The New Deal inoculated the federal Constitution with a kind of underground collectivist mentality. The Constitution itself was transmuted into a significantly different document. 1937, the year, of course, that Social Security was passed into law, marks the triumph of our own socialist revolution." End of quote. The part where I said the year, of course, that Social Security was passed into law, I added that. 1937, she said, marks the triumph of our own socialist revolution. Furthermore, she denounced the U.S. Supreme Court ruling U.S. versus Caroline Products. She says it was wrong that the United States government, that we the people should be able to protect we the people with regard to labor and environmental standards. Let's set the clock back to 1918. Let's set the clock back to 1925. Let's go back to before the New Deal, when there were no protections. When you did your job, and if you died, tough luck. Even if the employer, even if you died because the employer was just trying to save a few bucks, tough luck. Ann Coulter now, defending Janice Rogers Brown, quote, "Liberals are hysterical about Janice Brown principally because she is black," end quote. As for the New York Times, Coulter reports that the reporters who cover judicial nominations for the paper are, quote, "a bunch of racist Southern election supervisors out of retirement," end quote. Oh, it's all about race, is it, Anne? No, I really think it's about the fact that Janice Rogers Brown thinks that Social Security is socialism and that it is unconstitutional and that if she were on the Supreme Court, she would vote to strike it down. You've got to understand how really and truly radical and severe the agenda is of these guys who are in power right now. George W. Bush, Dick Cheney, this whole crowd, these so-called conservatives, there's nothing conservative about them. They are radicals. They are radical oligarchists. They believe in the rule by a few rich families of the United States of America. And the middle class can take a leap. The working poor can take a leap. They have no need for them. They don't need you and me. They don't need people who are in the middle class. At least they don't think they do. They would like to take us back to a time when the working class, the working people of this country, were simply plain old, out of luck, terrified, panic-stricken. They make cheaper workers that way. You didn't know? Just check out China. Janice Rogers Brown. Yes. Everybody's opposed to her because she's black. The other one that they're going to be highlighting in their ads, I'm telling you, this is all about the corporate agenda. This is all about stealing from you and me, from the middle class and the working poor in America, and giving that money to the wealthiest among us. That's the bottom line agenda of the Bush administration. Priscilla Owen. On Justice Sunday, Senate Majority Leader Bill Frist singled her out as one of the blocked appeals court nominees to praise in the telecast. She might be one of the first that they end up nominating for the Supreme Court. She has a long record of extremist decisions. Her own hometown paper described her. This is her hometown newspaper. Her own hometown newspaper described her as, and I quote, her hometown newspaper described her as all too willing to bend the law to fit her views rather than the reverse. In fact, in reference to one of Owen's dissents, then-colleague and fellow Texas Supreme Court Justice Alberto Gonzalez went so far as to describe the decision's proposed interpretation of the law as, quote, an unconscionable act of judicial activism. Yes, Priscilla Owen was called a judicial activist, an activist judge, an unconscionable activist judge, by the Chief Justice of the Texas Supreme Court, Alberto Gonzalez. The Houston Chronicle. Not exactly a right-wing rag. The Houston Chronicle, it is a right-wing rag. The Houston Chronicle said, and I quote, she too often contorts rulings to conform to her particular conservative outlook. But the most disturbing part of Priscilla Owen is also the most disturbing part of Janice Brown. And that is that she believes that corporations should be absolutely unrestrained, unconstrained, that they should be able to do whatever they want in the workplace, in the marketplace, in the world, that we the people should not have the authority to control their behavior or regulate them or protect ourselves from corporate behavior. In 2003, the Austin American-Statesman, a newspaper in Austin, Texas, the state capital where Owen worked as a judge in the state Supreme Court, declared that Owen, quote, could usually be counted upon in any important case that pitted an individual or group of individuals against business interests to side with business. Furthermore, she had a questionable ethical tendency to, quote, take campaign contributions from law firms and corporations and then, without recusing herself, without taking herself out of the decision, out of the case, she would rule in their favor when their cases came before her. A couple of notable examples, Halliburton and Enron. In the months during which the case was before the court, this was a case against Halliburton. Halliburton made its only campaign donations to Texas Supreme Court justices that year, giving thousands of dollars to Priscilla Owen and Alberto Gonzalez. The result? Halliburton won. In Enron Corp. versus Spring Independent School District, Owen authored the opinion for a unanimous court decision that saved Enron $225,000 and resulted in lost revenue for the school district. This is the real Republican agenda. Transfer wealth from the middle class to the rich, to the millionaires and billionaires among us. I'm not talking about somebody who's making $100,000 a year. That they're going to try and convince you that's rich. Sorry. The rich don't fly on commercial airplanes. They have private jets. The rich don't live in the same world we do. They don't send our kids to public schools. The truly rich in America are a class apart. When John Edwards said during the campaign, there are two Americas, he was speaking truth. And I think that most Americans have no idea how separate those two Americas really are. That the world of Limbaugh and his friends, of people worth hundreds of millions of dollars and billions of dollars, is a world most of us will never see. The closest glimpse you might get of it is Donald Trump's apartment on TV. They've even stopped running the program Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous because it was making the rich and famous uncomfortable. Now, who is a good, close friend of Priscilla Owen? Priscilla Owen, the one that they're going to be running the ads for, $1.5 million of TV ads, $350,000 of radio ads. One of her closest friends, Karl Rove. Coming back around to where we started 2.5 hours ago with this program, Karl Rove. Why does his name keep popping up? In 1994, he received hundreds of thousands of dollars from Priscilla Owens. Yes, she gave Karl Rove hundreds of thousands of dollars to work on her campaign. On her campaign when she was running for the Texas Supreme Court. They elect them down there. Does this smell to you as badly as it does to me? There's something really, really wrong with all this. And I have a feeling that it's not going to come out good if these guys get their way. It's Tom Harbin, 10 minutes before the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. ABC, you'll recall that the networks refused to run some ads last year. Just it was right around the election time, as I recall. From the National Council of Churches. Remember those ads? It showed people coming up to a church, and there was a nice white bread man and woman couple, and the minister says, "Oh, welcome to our church." And then a gay couple comes up, what looks like a gay couple, and, "Oh, sorry, you can't come in here." And black couple, "Sorry, you can't come in here." Something to that effect. I only saw it once, but you get the message very clearly. And then they flash to, my recollection, it was showing these people coming up and all being welcomed. And at the very end, it said, "We are the, as I recall, the United Church of Christ." I could be wrong. "And we welcome everyone." Well, yeah, no, it's the National Council of Churches, excuse me. Well, so the National Council of Churches ad, which says that their member churches do what Jesus said, which is welcome everyone. That ad was not acceptable to the networks. James Dobson's focus on the family bunch, which is, you know, working so aggressively to try and corrupt churches by injecting politics into religion, one of the most destructive forces against Christianity in Christendom, in my opinion, speaking as a Christian, they will take his ad. During ABC's schlocky reality show Super Nanny, they will be running his ad, and his ad is about his best-selling book, Dare to Discipline, his book that says that you must spank your children, and I quote, "with sufficient magnitude to cause the child to cry genuinely," end quote. He points out sometimes bruises happen. That's normal. Children, he says, have to be taught respect for authority at an early age. Otherwise, they will never develop respect for governmental authority or for God. Now, I have to tell you, one of the main core principles of Hitler's teachings in the 1930s, the Nazi teachings throughout the 1930s, was National Socialist child rearing, how to raise your children. And they published books on child rearing that everybody had to read, that were required. When you had a baby, you were given this book. And the book suggested that you must spank your children, you must beat your children. You must deprive them of contact if they misbehave. It was basically a manual on how to mistreat a child the way Hitler had been mistreated as a child. And some say that that child rearing, that Nazi child rearing in the 30s, has led to no end of problems. Now, there are others on the Reich who say that it was Ben Spock and his child rearing techniques in the 40s and 50s in the United States that led to those hippies in the 60s. Which do you think is more dangerous, the hippies in the 60s or the Nazis? James Dobson is coming down firmly on the side of Adolf Hitler and the Nazis in terms of child rearing techniques. This is horrible. And ABC is going to run their ads, although they wouldn't run ads for the National Council of Churches that said, we accept everyone. I would suggest that you contact ABC and let them know that you'd rather not hear from Mr. Dobson. Tom Hartman here with you. Thanks for being with us today. We'll see you again tomorrow. Same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.